When the moral victory is the only one that really matters, it's Not So MLS. With me, Andrew Vates, and Nick Thornton.
It's me.
How are you doing today? How was your your lengthy week in soccer?
I feel like I should be allowed into the Whitecaps training facility to get into one of those cold pools. I have seen more of the Whitecaps this week than my own family. I'm almost never sick of soccer, but I think I ran out of BC Place last night to just be like, I just need some time off.
This is a kind of like, there's a little late season compression going on, I guess.
I think perhaps that might be a bit of a theme in today's episode, at least for some of the notes that I have is, with a bit of congestion in the schedule, I think that affected some of the results. Is to quickly sum up at least Saturday's results, ties, ties, and more ties.
Yes.
Or to be proper about it, draws, draws, and more draws.
And even going back to last weekend, the Seattle LA Siggy Bowl that we were talking about last week that went on after our podcast came to air was a draw as well. Did you get a chance to watch that one?
I did, actually. I was mostly just trying to see if my somewhat offhanded prediction would come true, which I think I believe I said, don't count LA out of this one. I think everyone was surprised that they got a point out of it, but I don't think it can be that surprising that Siggy would rally the team enough to go against his former team and get something out of it.
Right.
You know, I'm sure, like any coach, he'd say, oh, it has nothing to do with the team, and, you know, it's just another game, but it was clear that he got under those players and made them well aware of what he wanted out of that game, so... yeah, I think probably a fair result as most of them around the league. Mm-hmm. Do you want to start with Canadian teams this week and then we can maybe hop around and look at some of the other results?
Well, sounds great. Yes. And why not start with Vancouver, since you were at those games, starting with a 3-0 win at Minnesota on Wednesday.
Yeah, I thought that was overall about as easy of a game the Whitecaps are going to have this year. Which is interesting because Minnesota's form has been a little bit up and down. We know that they're not a terrible team and they can certainly score goals, but they never really looked in it, to be honest. As a fan, it wasn't the most entertaining game to watch, even though you don't want to complain about a 3-0 victory for your team at home, but there just wasn't much going on in the game. It was a very similar lineup to the previous game, I believe. And yeah, they just looked very comfortable and I think didn't really have to push themselves beyond second gear to get that result.
No. I think that heading out of that game, and still the Whitecaps are first in the West, which I think is a strange feeling. Like no, but like that can't be right. It must
certainly
be.
At this point in the season. Anyway,
it's hard to actually, especially just because of we talked about it over and over, the shifting landscape in the West could easily be fourth as first. Any particular week. But I think that going into that game, feeling so confident, it really just seems like a possible banana peel that the Whitecaps have tripped on many times before. So I kind of saw it as much as if it didn't have the most in terms of drama, I was at least relieved that at this point in the season, the Whitecaps could be a team that sits so high up in the conference and is able to just get those results.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think it's what they needed to do. They put on a very, for the most part, very clean, clinical performance. They didn't take a lot of risks. They played a little bit less of the counter-attacking thing than they've done, I think. You know, it was also, yeah, it was a very conservative performance from the Caps overall. And I want to stress here that I'm also not complaining. As a fan watching the game, yeah, there's points where you kind of tuned out a little bit. Right. But after the fact, you're certainly, those are the kinds of games that in the past we've taken for granted. And as everyone keeps saying, games in hand mean nothing if you're not getting points out of them. Games in hand at home. So I think nobody assumed we'd win the game, but we really did need to go in and just get 3 points anyway, anyhow.
Yes.
And I think they put forward a fairly conservative lineup and game plan that would get us those 3 points, and they executed it to a T, which put us in a really good position coming into the weekend, because as of yesterday's game, I think we all knew that Columbus, coming in also on a 5 or 6 game unbeaten streak, we knew that that game wasn't a given, and that we don't have a good record against Columbus, and so we really needed to show up and produce something out of that match, which we left very, very late, but we did that as well. And I sort of turned to my friend yesterday just before the game started, and I was like, I'm just going to call it 3-3, like back and forth, and maybe the last team to score wins. But if I wasn't right in my actual prediction, I was right in the spirit of it.
I looked in the standings and I saw 1 point for Columbus and the Whitecaps and 3 points for the narrative. With I feel like when I was able to tune in, all eyes were on Kakuta Mane and Tony Chani as sort of the two halves of that trade from earlier in the year, with varying results. I came away with the impression that Chani kind of redeemed himself from a less than impressive game with that.
Yeah, in truth, you know, I think Kakuta had a fantastic game. It was good to see him back at PC Place. I think it's one of those things where everybody knew the trade was necessary, but everybody had such personal attachment to Kakuta Mane because he'd been here for so long. So it was nice to see when his name was called out in the starting 11, big cheers. When he scored his goal, somewhat quieted cheers. But when they did the replay, you know, he still got an applause, and when he was subbed off, he got a standing ovation. So that was kind of nice to see. And again, as you said, the storyline, I think, just adds a little bit something to a game where I felt like even the audience was a little bit burnt out of the third game in 8 days. But yeah, Chani, he was, I think the overall storyline to me of the Caps on Saturday was just tired legs. The whole team all around looked pretty tired. I think Waston and Parker and Winsky, arguably Harvey as well, they looked a little bit more well-rested and switched on, but there was an awful lot of space in midfield, and Columbus was basically able to run straight down the middle of the pitch without much challenge to them or serious challenge. And an awful lot of just kicking the ball away. Columbus likes to keep possession, and we know that going in, but when you're playing against a team like that also generates so much, so many chances out of so much possession, it's important to actually break up that play in a significant way, not just kick the ball away to another one of their players. But 92nd minute, Chani completely unmarked on the far post, and just does what he needs to do and just calmly sort of gets a foot behind it. What were your thoughts of the game?
I think that of the set of three, of Salt Lake, Minnesota, and Columbus, it's unfortunate that I would say Columbus is the best of the three and that they come at the end of the swing. I think I was curious what you thought of the substitutions, because it kind of did seem a little bit near the end of the game. My impression that I got, I listened to it on the radio, was that it seemed like they were cycling through ideas. It seemed like they were kind of running out of steam a little bit in terms of trying to find ways to The Whitecaps were trying to find ways to create matchups that would give them a little more life, and it seemed like they were cycling through ideas of how to do that.
A little bit, yeah. I'm really trying to stop myself from criticizing coaches on their starting lineups, because you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Robbo starts more or less the same team he's played with all week. You're going to get criticized if you don't get the result. If you switch it up too much and you don't get the result, then you're going to get criticized for making too many changes. So I don't want to say lineup doesn't matter, but I think, especially with the substitutions, it did sort of feel like they were looking for those matchups rather than what's the whole picture here? Like, out of everybody on the pitch, how are they going to play together? Mm-hmm. I think I've probably been a little bit unfair on Alphonso Davies in the last couple of games, just because I think it's important for people to remember that he's still developing and that he does make mistakes for as much talent as he's shown.
Yes.
I thought he was a bit of a head scratcher of a substitute coming in on coming in yesterday, because I didn't really see what he was going to add down that wing that we didn't already really have.
Right.
You know, I was expecting to see Ebini maybe start. I don't know what his fitness is like.
Right.
But for me, Ebini has been much more threatening. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll say this. I didn't think much of the substitutions, and a couple of them were head scratchers, and none of them had arguably that much of an impact. However, we got the result. And it wasn't from a substitute, it was from Chani. So I guess, you know, whatever criticism I could level, Carl Robinson could shoot back well. We came back and got a very important point against a really good team. So, sure, you can argue putting Ebini in over Breck Shea. You could argue, do you maybe start Hurtado and let him run out the defenders? This is a thing that my friend Tim was saying to me the whole game, too, is that Columbus cycled through, like, three center backs.
Yes.
And were making a lot of defensive substitutions. None of their defenders looked comfortable. Their goalkeeper looked really shaky. And I just couldn't for the life of me quite understand how we couldn't hold on to the ball for more than 2 seconds and just complete a dribble and have a few more shots. I think Reyna came very close a couple of times, but they looked really uncomfortable back there and went a little bit too untested for my liking.
Yes. I think at the end of the day, you're quite right. The result happened. I imagine that some people I talked to said they were a little disappointed, but I think that, you know, as long as you can sort of neutralize get a point out of this East-West matchup.
Well, like you said, it's unfortunate that the better team that we played in those three games came at the end. We were playing at maybe 75%. 7 points at home out of three games, I think, is an entirely respectable result. Mm-hmm. And it's important with games in hand, being at the top of the table, it's important to not lose, right? Champion teams don't win every game, but they minimize the losses as much as they can. And, you know, we could have given up, and that very easily, and it looked like for a while that was going to be a Columbus victory. I mean, Kakuta's goal, nobody stepped up to it. It was sort of a bad effort by Osted as well. He probably should have known what was coming in. Mm-hmm. It looked like we were going to give up some crucial points at home. So, I'm happy with the point.
So, elsewhere in Los Angeles, Toronto continued another week, another 4-0 roll. No Giovinco.
And so,
no Altidore, no, if I heard as well.
Yeah, well, I was going to try to phrase that as a fun question to you, but yeah, this is the somewhat alarming thing. Certainly not alarming if you're a Toronto fan, but if you're a fan of any other team. No Altidore, no Giovinco at any point, and they win 4-0. Now, people are going to say against LA. However, it was LA in their stadium, so you'd think it would be a little bit tougher. I think LA survived about as long as any team by about, you know, they made it 25 minutes without conceding a goal.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what else to say about Toronto other than, I mean, if they don't win the cup this year, I think they should just fire the whole team.
Well, we've got...
just out of the sheer audacity of it. That, like, so I went back and I went, when do you think the last time was that Toronto FC lost a game?
Oh, I'm going to say April.
Okay, well, it's not quite that far back. July 1st.
Mm.
And we lost won't identify myself with them. Uh-huh. They lost 3-1. They've
had Chicago?
What's that?
Chicago?
Dallas,
yes.
Yeah. They've had a number of draws, mostly away games again. This is the thing where they seem to have struggled away to produce much more than a point.
Mm-hmm.
They drew in New York, they drew in Colorado, they drew in D.C. They then got some good wins against Portland, Chicago, Philadelphia, Montreal. So, like, maybe it's not unfair to say that they don't do well away, but I don't, you know, they're playing Montreal, New England, New York Red Bulls, Montreal again, and Atlanta down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any real possibility other than them taking all of those games max points. Maybe they're playing home to New York Red Bulls. Maybe the Red Bulls get something out of that. The away in Atlanta, which we can talk about Atlanta in a minute, mm-hmm. maybe they don't take that one, but they're a juggernaut right now. They still do have some defensive things to sort out, I think. It's not like teams don't get chances against them. I think if you're just watching highlights, you're going to see it mostly Toronto shooting the ball at the other team's net. But there is a way to break through Toronto. I'm just not sure any team has the guts to do it right now in the form that they're in.
Well, the thing that everybody is watching right now and why I think that this is interesting that this game comes where it does is Toronto is coming after some of the significant scoring records held by the Galaxy 98 team, mm-hmm. coached by your friend and mine, Octavio Zambrano, now of the men's national team. And I actually did, I went and looked back in the audio, I do have old, that the national team audio does have some stuff of him talking about that.
Oh, really?
Yes, because people are elbowing him and saying, hey, so are we breaking the scoring record this year or what? your LA 98 watch is, Toronto is 6 points back of the all-time points record.
6 points back.
6 points back.
Which, yeah, something tells me they're going to be able to get 6 points against some of these teams coming up.
Right. Goals they're probably not going to get because the record is 85 and they're on 63.
Mm.
So I think they've got what? Like they've got, I think, five games left. So mm-hmm. I don't. As good as they are, and maybe they're going to score 25 and make me look like a complete idiot for saying that.
I think if they score 25, they're not going to make any commentators look like idiots. But I agree, I don't think it's likely. But I just wanted to pull up their stats for a second, the team sheet, because I think mm-hmm. looking through some of these, you begin to see where they're so dangerous. Giovinco and Altidore. Not surprising. Giovinco's got 15 goals and 6 assists. Mm-hmm. Altidore's got 13 goals and 5 assists. Victor Vasquez, who's really brought in to be... Yes, we know he's an attacking midfielder, but they really brought him in to sort of run the middle of the pitch, if I'm not mistaken, and provide mm-hmm. some good distribution. He has 7 goals and 16 assists. 16 assists.
Wow!
Justin Morrow has 5 goals, 1 assist. Ricketts has 5 goals and 1 assist. Marky Delgado has 3 goals and 4 assists. Jonathan Azorio has 2 goals and 3 assists. Jordan Hamilton has 2 goals and 1 assist. Nicholas Hasler has 2 goals and 1 assist. Drew Moore has 2 goals. Raheem Edwards has 1 goal and 5 assists. Do you see a pattern developing here?
It's deep. Yeah. I mean,
goals by committee and victories by committee. They've got an outstanding lineup and depth. I think that's the thing that's getting overlooked. If you just said, okay, Giovinco's got 15 goals, Altidore's got 13 goals, you go, that's why they're in first place by a mile. But when you look at the production of the rest of the team, and considering this is not the first game on Saturday where they've been without Altidore and Giovinco and gotten a very definitive result.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you can look at LA and say, well, look at their form over this year, but they've been a little bit on an upswing. You know, clearly the team is playing for positions. And aside from the last goal, they didn't look like they'd given up. LA was trying to get something out of that match. But right now, like I said, I don't see a scenario where Toronto does not just run away with this whole thing.
Now here's, I also, when I add to your assist watch, Alexander Bono picked up a goalkeeping assist yesterday, so Bono trying to get onto with the fourth goal.
Okay, and so this is my theme rant for this week, is which is well done to him, because it was beautifully placed. But the other thing is, the LA defender, I forgot who it was, is standing there and is watching it, doesn't even try for it, lets it hit the ground. Ball watching is the theme of this week. I don't know if it's just tired legs, but every game I watched, there was a tremendous amount of defenders sitting and waiting for the play to develop, and or not getting on the second ball or on the rebound, and an awful lot of goals were given up by an awful lot of teams this week because defenders were just standing there with their thumbs in their shorts, kind of waiting to see what would happen. There was, I think it was it might have been the Atlanta-Orlando game, and there's 3 defenders standing there with their arms up, and the play is still on, and it's like, put your hands down, get in, make the last ditch effort, try to keep the ball out of the back of the net. Like, I know it's easier said than done. I've played as a defender, so I know that it's easy to level criticism at defenders, but right. To stand there and wait for it is just, I was yelling at my screen a lot this week, let's put it that way.
Sensible. I was going to look at, think about next, this Montreal-Minnesota game.
What are your thoughts on this? I think we both just kind of were able to catch up on the result there, which was a bit of a head-scratcher, but what did you take away from looking at that game?
Watching the highlights, I kind of felt like I had in my hands like an article in a scientific journal that describes some experiment with an outlandish result. Like, how did they do this?
Mm-hmm.
How did this happen? How did Montreal lose at home to Minnesota? Who, I mean, we always talk about how none of these teams are truly awful, but you know, they didn't show much in the Vancouver game, and they were able to go into Stade Saputo and get that game-winning goal late on. It was also penalty city, as Piatti got one and missed one, and then Montreal got one as well and buried it.
And knowing that you just kind of rewatched some of those highlights, what would you say was Montreal's biggest mistake? Or I guess even just asking the question, how did they lose that one?
I think that there was just too much of, when you look at, as much as the, I believe the Benigni goal, was, as much as that was out of a little nowhere and kind of near to the back of the box, he had so much space too. It really feels like the gears were, it was in late, the gears were out, or sorry, you'd shifted out of gear with the game in its final moments.
Yeah, and I think that happened with Bernier's goal in the 9th minute as well. if there was another theme to this week, it was the near and far posts were left completely unmarked by a number of teams. And I think one of the reasons why there was a 3-2 result in Montreal was that a number of times, like with Bernier, there's just nobody really covering him there. Mm-hmm. And then Montreal responded by paying the favor back to Minnesota and just not guarding those near and far posts. And you've got guys on both wings that you go, like, you're inviting the chance, right? Like, it's an easy side-footed ball or low header in that you've got to have someone there. And there's a number of times where, you know, play is developing, it's everything's within the 18-yard box, and there's two defenders in the box. Mm-hmm. And you're going, usually there should be at least four. If you're really trying to get a result, there should probably be more like six or eight. How are there two? Two center backs trying to cover four or five players and nobody on the near and far posts.
It's adventurous fullbacks are in fashion. It always shocks me when I see it, but
they certainly are, which if we can go back for 1 second, because I don't think we've given the young kid, Jake Nowinski, much credit on the show, and it's worth giving him a little shout-out, is
please
defending against Kakuta Mane for an entire game and having to deal with his speed, I thought had an outstanding defensive performance this week. Started all three games, started and finished all three games.
Really?
In 8 days, yeah. Shannon Williams wasn't even on the bench for the last two. I don't know if he was last Saturday. And just came out, I mean, his athleticism is fantastic, but I think he's developing into one of the better right backs in the league because he's been where he needs to be defensively, not just bombing forward.
A quietly good rookie season from a player that was selected, I think, I'm trying to recall if you would call it sort of the middle band of the draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think every team is going to say they got their top pick. Carl Robinson has maintained that Jake Nowinski was their number one pick, but he was certainly the middle of the pack in terms of all the draftees.
Having a quietly good season, I think. Or at least, like, what you're seeing is the kind of development over the course of a year that through lack of minutes or lack of growth, Fraser Aird was not necessarily able to grasp in his year here.
Absolutely. And the fact that you see it from game to game as well, that he's Jake Nowinski, yeah, he makes mistakes, he does get caught out, but you can see him sort of take it all in stride. Like, he does get beat, but then he won't get beat again. Kakuta Mane in the first half of that game was really whipping in a lot of low crosses because he knows that Osted struggles to get down into those low shots.
Mm-hmm.
But Nowinski was there each and every time to at least get a challenge in on it. And you could see he'd worked him out rather quickly. Mm. Kakuta beat him once, and then the next play, Nowinski was there and knew when to get back, when he could venture forward. That's the exciting thing to see about him, is that it's not just a development over the course of the year, but game to game, he really seems to, he learns very quickly on the pitch and figures attackers out, which is not something you see in most MLS fullbacks.
Very true. The ability to read those players is very important.
Yes.
I was also going to, while we're jumping back, just hit one point I meant to talk about with the Toronto LA 98 comparison, was that Toronto's now the other record they're looking at is they're 4 points back on goal difference.
Mm.
It's like 37-41, so that seems a lot more manageable. That seems a lot more manageable than the goals. Because Toronto have also had a very sneaky season in terms of among the best in terms of goals allowed as well.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the league's best. But the point you have to worry about, as much as it's very exciting to chase that LA 98 team, is that they lost. They lost in the conference finals to Chicago, who is second in the conference.
Okay.
Like, Zambrano was fired by the middle of the next season.
Yeah.
That...
Okay, so then can we play just a little bit of a fun game and just indulge me here? And we will ask that the listeners are kind to us down the playoff stretch. But right now, out of the Eastern and Western Conference, who are the teams that you think can go toe-to-toe with Toronto and get a result with them? And we know as well, because Toronto's probably likely to finish first, that they're automatically going to go through. So it means whoever's playing them is going to have a two-game stretch against them, not a one-game knockout. So out of the teams in the table right now, the teams that are likely to make it into the playoffs, knowing that there's going to be some movement in the East and especially in the Western Conference, where there's, I mean, between first and fourth, there is 1 point between the teams. Mm-hmm. Who do you think can reasonably beat Toronto over a two-game stretch in the playoffs?
Well, not that any of the teams that are not currently in the playoff stretch you would consider to be that killer matchup.
Colorado.
I look at this and we have yet to talk about Atlanta. I think that their upcoming game is going to be really interesting from an atmosphere perspective. But I think when you look at this list, I think it's got to be Chicago. I've detailed before that that New York and Toronto don't match up. New York City.
Yeah.
I think that. So that I did see a piece where it's like, maybe only one team can beat Toronto or whatever, and I was like, oh, if it's not New York, what team is it? And it was definitely New York that they thought of it because of Villa, but they haven't been able to beat them yet.
Well, and the Chicago thing is interesting because if Chicago goes to Toronto and let's say it's a 2-1 result, Chicago gets the away goal, then going down to Toyota Park in Chicago, Chicago can, I think, feasibly keep a clean sheet against Toronto or outscore them at home. Mm-hmm. And then there's your victory, right?
Yes.
If Chicago can get the all-important away goal against Toronto, and again, we're dealing entirely in hypotheticals here, if they even match up against each other, I think it's a very real possibility that Chicago could beat them. And I think that's something that maybe people aren't really thinking ahead too much about. They just understandably have stars in their eyes about what a magnificent season this has been for Toronto. But as we've talked about, sure, they've only lost 3 games and they've got a very good defensive record, but we know that there's a way through this team, and especially over 2 legs, you know, it is possible that Chicago could get something against them. That being said, Chicago's looking a little bit rugged at the moment, where they're hanging on and they're producing results, but it's been some time since they've had a really electric team performance that we were used to seeing kind of mid-season from them.
Mm-hmm. The other alternative is another December MLS Cup final, Sporting Kansas City 0-0 to penalties.
Yeah, it's entirely possible.
You gotta look at who's a balanced team, I think, to go against this kind of thing.
Yeah, in terms of you're right. In terms, of especially if defense, Sporting KC seems to be the option of the team that could pop probably over 2 legs, maybe squeak something out. But you mentioned something very interesting about the Atlanta thing, which maybe if we can shift away from the hypothetical back into the real.
Let's head to Atlanta.
Not surprisingly, Atlanta's had a goal-filled week.
Mm-hmm.
The performance on Wednesday, I think, has safely put to rest perhaps New England's chances at the playoffs. And especially considering New England's performance yesterday, it's hard to... Sorry, I'm bouncing around here, but...
Yeah.
Three red cards for New England over the Wednesday and Saturday game. I'd argue the first red card on Wednesday was a little bit harsh. Mm-hmm. The second one was like, I mean, you swat away a ball in the box with your hand. You kind of leave the referee no choice.
Right.
And the one yesterday is a careless elbow in the face. Is, again, a mandatory red card. So New England has really, I think, just sort of thrown away their chances. I don't know if the 7-0 thrashing to Atlanta had anything to do with this, but that, I mean, it wasn't just that they were playing New England. It was that we saw what Atlanta can do, which everybody knows they're capable of.
Yes.
When they're switched on and they're playing those quick one-touch passes, and they're just cutting through defensive lines like ribbons. You know, and now Martinez has got 3 hat tricks this season. 3. We know Atlanta can be stopped. I mean, they drew with Orlando in a sort of a shootout, basically, yesterday, a 3-3 draw. But if Atlanta can stay in it, I think Atlanta is one of those possible contenders for going toe-to-toe with Toronto, simply because they have a very similar approach, which is you defend by attacking, and you spend as much time down in the final third of the opposing team as you can, and you just outscore them. And then maybe they get a couple of breaks, but, you know, Toronto's a team that's likes to keep the ball, build up their play, and have a game plan, a lot of set plays. Atlanta is a team that likes to hold on to the ball, build up play, a lot of set plays. Right. So I think that those two would potentially line up really nicely. I think it's a lot of people would argue Toronto would still be the favorites to win that, and I would agree, but could be an interesting scenario.
They are, speaking of breaking old Los Angeles Galaxy records, their attendance of 70,425 beats the 1996 debut match record in the Rose Bowl for which was 69,256. So just over the hump, and they're taking the tarps off again because I think it's like in the 49,000 range with the tarps on. Mm-hmm. They're taking them off again for the Toronto game.
Yeah.
So that'll, at the very least, you know, some small amount of action, I think, will take place in terms of determining whether or not there's a storyline to come back to. I thought, because you were talking again about, you know, people being open at the near and far post, yeah. I was really... really blown away by the amount of, like, you want to talk about a high press. I feel like Atlanta were like camping the goal line, basically. Like there was so yeah. much play around the, like across the mouth of the goal, that it was surprising that they didn't score first and that they didn't score any earlier than they did. I think Orlando scored first, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, they did. And again, for both teams, it was the same thing. It's like players waiting and watching for the second ball in, waiting to see what would happen, trying to get the offside call, and just not being turned on to see the threat. Which, it's a little baffling when both teams are doing it in the same game. That I don't get where the left and the right backs are. Mm-hmm. Or even your center mids or your wingers to come back and cover those spots. But, you know, I think the Saturday result for Atlanta's pretty fair. Orlando's hit their stride a little bit, and good for them for coming in and getting the first goal in a fairly hostile environment. But what do you think about, and I think you kind of asked this question last week, but now that we've seen it, I mean, when you've got 70,000 loud fans behind you in this brand new sort of towering cavernous stadium, mm-hmm. that's like having 3 extra players on the pitch.
True.
What kind of pressure do you think this is going to create on other teams to, I mean, I'm not saying everybody's going to rip down their stadium and build something like they've got in Atlanta, but pressure on teams to create a bit more of that atmosphere where it's going to be, Atlanta's going to become, I think, the least liked place to go and play for away teams. And it has an intimidation that other stadiums, I just feel like, don't have. I mean, the very fact that they're even getting 49,000 for a regular season game for an expansion team.
Yeah, it's huge.
Right? Like that is truly, you know, if Atlanta finished dead last this season, that alone would be such an enormous achievement.
I would be interested to look into, I feel like I want to hear more from, I want to hear more from Atlanta fans. And just because I'm curious to know what, like, the mentality is at this point, because it's like, are these all people who are being, are really, do we need to show these people a show? Like, are they the sort of people that I think a 3-3 draw is a great example of excitement in soccer that sometimes people will not look past the scoreline on. Not to say anything bad, I'm just saying about like any first team time market. Anytime you're getting 70,000 people into a stadium, you're bringing along some friends, I think. So I'm curious what the mentality is and whether or not people are in for the long haul, or if they feel like they need to be impressed still, or what?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously got to be a bit of both. I mean, somebody in that stadium has come with someone, right? Like, it's not just all individual ticket buyers. I think they do seem to have a very large base of soccer fans in Atlanta that have kind of just been waiting for something like this. Mm-hmm. But another part of this is I think it puts a lot of pressure on other teams to not have a 0-0 goal line. I think there's a lot of pressure on MLS teams and coaches to get goals in a game. And I'm not saying this is like any big conspiracy. I think it's true of most modern teams.
Right.
That you see teams back off of each other a little bit. If it's looking really even, you see teams sort of back off of each other to give a little bit of room and give a chance and know that you might give up a goal, but then you'll go back and your team might get something. I mean, it's hard to articulate. I'm not trying to say that teams are allowing goals or anything like that. I just think that there's a lot of pressure, and I've seen it play out on the field a few times where if things look like they're headed for a 0-0 result, teams will ramp up and give each other a bit of space rather than dig in, sit back, and defend to get a clean sheet.
I think that we've moved past an era... I think we've moved past a more defensive era in soccer, and I think that when I first started watching the Premier League in 2005, I think the shift was kind of underway already, where it was like there's a lot of, it's unpopular to have a team that is overwhelmingly defensive. Everyone in the whole world wants a young team that attacks and moves the ball. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it's almost a marketing thing. Like nobody wants, as much as nobody wants to lose, like especially nobody wants to be boring.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. And I think when you look at center backs across the league or across any league and what the trend is towards these towering giant center backs, it's not just about clearing the ball out of the box. Commentators now remark on the fact when a center back finishes a season and only has 2 goals. I mean, yeah, we've definitely entered into a different era of soccer. And of course, none of this is stuff that hasn't been said before. But
right.
I think in the MLS context, it's interesting to think about how, you know, as you mentioned last week with LAFC coming in and other expansion teams and how they might... enter into things. that there's a lot more pressure now on the expansion clubs to come in, spend a lot of money on attacking players, and build a new stadium. Part of me is sort of grateful the Whitecaps entered the league when we did, because I'm not sure why Vancouver could compete now to try to get into the market. And overall, that is going to put a lot of pressure on other teams. But it'd be interesting to see, because in 2 years, you know, as much as we can talk about the Torontos and Chicagos and the Portlands and KC and Seattle teams as sort of these big teams, it could be LAFC and Cincinnati and Atlanta that are the giants in a couple of years.
Yeah.
For creating that brand of entertaining soccer. And the thing there is, if they're going to play that way, that's going to force other teams to play that way, that they'll not just be able to sit back and defend against a team that's going to throw everything forward. So, yeah, I feel like we're going to see a lot of goals over the next few years in MLS. Maybe not a lot of great defensive plays in the box, and maybe a lot more ball watching and near and far post being unmarked, but there will certainly be a lot of goals.
Well, it's important. It is important to give credit to the good work on the goals allowed side from Kansas City and Toronto.
Yeah, absolutely. Two teams that have obviously made it a priority, despite the fact that both teams can score. They certainly know how to tidy things up at the back as well. I'm looking around the league here. Are there any other games you feel like we really need to say too much about? I mean, we got a 0-0 result, Dallas, Seattle. Sporting KC, unsurprisingly, just kind of ran over New England. Real Salt Lake beat Portland. That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, very true. And these are the Portland and Seattle results are do well to hold everything marble smooth at the top of the West. I think that you can really look at that as a statement of intent from RSL, especially as Houston looks good. Did they win theirs? No, Houston lost to San Jose.
Yeah.
That scene is the other. It continues to be the molten core. It's like we've got a set of four in the West, another set of four in the West that are, and then another set of, or a second set below them. San Jose on 39, Salt Lake on 38, Houston on 38, Dallas on 38. Some good teams are going to miss out there.
Absolutely, and the crazy thing is like just the amount of movement we've seen between those teams, because from game to game, week to week, it's at this point, it's almost like toss a coin. I mean, San Jose has been okay. Some games they've looked really great in terms of possession and chances created. It was good of them to just go and get a result yesterday. Still didn't look that definitive. And again, they've just, right now, I sort of feel like it's like they win one, they lose one. They win one, they lose one, they draw one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're now sitting at 39 points. And depending on results, it's not inconceivable that they could end up higher than fifth place, which is where they're sitting. But depending on other results, Real Salt Lake seems to be putting something sort of quietly together here. They're at 38 points. Houston, Dallas are kind of chipping away. Minnesota's getting results, but I don't think they're on any kind of serious run for the playoffs. They're just trying to really, I think, solidify their team and make plans for the off season. But that's the thing right now, is you have Colorado, who was able to take a point yesterday, which I would say is actually taking 2 points off of New York City. Uh-huh. And so you've got Colorado, LA, and Minnesota sort of barking down at the bottom here that, teams are going to beat them, but they're also going to take points off of these other teams. And I think that's why we're seeing so much movement still in the West, is that none of the top teams can really just assume that they're going to beat those bottom three teams.
True. Yeah, that's very true. I was going to say the only game today is the only Sunday game scheduled is New York Red Bull versus Bulls versus Philadelphia. when you look at those, when you look at those six teams, also Chicago beat DC 3-0 to not banana, to also not banana peel, which is important, and maybe New York needs to really look at if it's going to be doing these draws to Colorado.
Yeah.
Now 3 points back and possibly being possibly at risk of losing that automatic qualification spot. I was going to ask if you think we're done in the East. We've been talking a little bit about movement back and forth and who has the who might fall out and who might stay in. And the Impact now sit 5 points back of Red Bulls in the sixth spot.
Yeah.
With the Red Bulls have the game in hand. Atlanta have 2 more points than that, and they also have a game in hand. And neither the Impact or the Revs really look that impressive right now. Are we done with are these our six?
I think we could well be. Yeah, you could make a case Montreal's not finished yet, and they've been scoring goals. So depending on who they're playing, maybe they get a few more points. Same with New England. Although the last few games, quite apart from the 7-0 blowout against Atlanta, just total lack of discipline and concentration. They've whatever they were building and sort of finally grinding out some results, I feel like they've utterly thrown away this week. To have three people who are away because of red cards and to put themselves in that position is just ridiculous. I mean, again, in Atlanta, it's like handballs in the box happen, but to go to lose two players in a game that, I mean, you know you're going to lose. It's not like, what are you sacrificing there? It's one thing if it's 1-1 and you're trying to get the win, but you know, you're losing 4-0 and then you get another player sent off because of a handball in the box. It's just stupid. I think we could be done. I think Atlanta, Columbus, Chicago, New York might move around a little bit.
Yeah.
But I find it very hard to envision a scenario where Montreal gets in. Maybe they just squeak in. But when you look at the teams above them, not many of them are dropping points. They're at least getting draws each week, and neither Montreal or New England have been able to do that. If they were drawing all their games and then winning a few, they might have a chance. But I don't think Toronto, New York City, Chicago, Columbus, Atlanta are going to lose a lot of games down the stretch. And New York Red Bulls, although they've been iffy, I think they're in good form now. I think you're right, and I think this is probably the way that it shapes up.
Montreal have Toronto away on Wednesday next.
That should be good. Is Toronto doing okay at the moment? I haven't heard anything about them.
Do you have anything else? I feel like we've
yeah, the picture. I think the you know, it's one of those weeks where you get a lot of draws where you're like, I don't think we need to say too much. Chicago over DC. I mean, come on.
It's important to get those results. On a week like that, where people are missing out on it, actually going out there and getting the points are important.
100%. And DC has shown that they can punish teams who take them for granted. San Jose got 3 points. Yeah, I think we're good. I think today's game, I don't expect will be too revelatory. I feel like the Red Bulls should be able to walk away with a pretty easy 3 points there. Philadelphia might make them work for it, but I think we know who's going to come out the victor there.
I think that the idea here, if there's going to be any more movement in the playoff picture or not, is this is the Red Bulls' chance to state their case.
Yeah.
They've been kind of... they've been kind of floating a little bit, and if they want to stay in the playoffs and if they want to sort of make a go of it, now is the time to sort of like for them to show how they're going to do that.
Absolutely. And it looks like the game's coming up. It's a lot of teams, especially in the West, that are doing very well against teams that are not doing so well. So I feel like next week is the interesting one, is there's a lot of games that the top teams need to take their 3 points and really seal their their postseason fate.
Yes. Well, when that happens, I will talk to you again.
All right, sounds good. Until then, guard your near and far post.
You can now find this podcast on iTunes.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You can. You can do that.
At That's So NLS with this wonderful, lovely logo.
Friend is great. It's pretty great. I like it a lot.
I lost my mind when I saw it. It was very good. Where can we find you online?
You can follow me at That's So MLS on Twitter, where I will go toe-to-toe with you if you do not like my comments about Alfonso Davies. Or we can chat about constructive things. Where can we find you?
I am at Team Bates, www.team-bates.com. And check out whatahowler.com.
Cool. All right, sir. Until next week.
Don't get sent off.
I won't.